Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Voices for Justice for Wednesday, September 2, 2009. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, coming to you live today from Oregon, California, Maryland, and Washington. Human trafficking is in your backyard. No matter what your demographics are, the dark secret of America can no longer be ignored and swept under the rug. Today, we have a wonderful panel of experienced, educated, and passionate guests who work tirelessly each and every day trying to eradicate this epidemic. With us today, we welcome Seth Johnson, the Advocacy Director for Transitions Global, headquartered in Portland, Oregon. Transitions Global is a nonprofit organization providing care and restoration to survivors of sex trafficking globally. Currently, Transitions Global is working to build a shelter in the Northwest region, and Seth will be telling us a little bit more about that shortly. Also joining us is Suzanne Stanford, the CEO of My Internet Safety Coach. Suzanne is also the author of the proposed federal legislation, Parents Against Predators Act, also known as PAPA, that is expected to be introduced in 2010. Suzanne's also a member of the Orange County Human Trafficking Task Force in California, and we welcome her here as well. Last but certainly not least, we welcome Colonel Bill Hiller, whose personal story can be seen in the motion picture Taken. Colonel Hiller's heartbreaking personal experience has led him to educate law enforcement and the public on human trafficking. Colonel Hiller is retired from the U.S. Army Special Forces, and his experiences include tactical, counterterrorism, explosive ordnance, emergency medicine, and psychological warfare. Welcome to all of our guests today. Our guests will be taking your call later on. The call-in number is 347-838-86. Again, that number is 347-838-8622, and throughout the show, our guests will answer your questions. For in-depth bios and information on our panel, please visit the link section on our site, blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. And you may also reference transitionsglobal.org, humantrafficking.org, Seroptimus.org, and CNN.com, all of which we've gathered some information from for this program. This week, I learned of a case out of California on a young lady, 16 years of age, Sarah Cruzan. She was abducted and kidnapped at 11 years old. And now that she's 16, since the time of her kidnapping, has been raped, sold into trafficking, and kidnapped. And when she was 16, decided to take the law into her own hands and kill her pimp and her abductor. She has gotten life in prison for the rest of her life. Whereas when we look at the JC case and we see an abductor who has kidnapped and a rapist, and someone that was to serve 50 years behind bars to life and got out after only 11 years and turned around and took an 11-year-old child, I can only assume that the room was made for a victim like Sarah. We'll be speaking on that case in a week or so, but today we're speaking on human trafficking, the dark side of America. This is the best kept secret in America because everyone wants to sweep it under a rug. An estimate of well over 100,000 children and young women are trafficked every day, according to the FBI. According to humantrafficking.org, it's estimated, in addition to what's going on here on our own soil, domestically, 14,000 to 17,500 people, mostly women and girls, are trafficked into the U.S. from other countries. Among these characteristics include children between the ages of 9 and 17 years of age. That's an average of 11 years old, which many of the recent cases we can reference back to. These are quiet, shy, lonely girls, many from low-income and divorced families. However, even though the abductions and the kidnapped victims can range at any age, any ethnicity, any sex, many of those missing are sold into trafficking. And no matter the demographics and the family status, this epidemic continues to happen here in the U.S., and it can happen to any of us, any of us. I have a 2-year-old niece and a 1-year-old niece, and everyone asks, why, if you have no children, are you so passionate? Brianna and Isabella are those reasons. One of the people that join us today is Bill Hiller. Colonel Hiller, many of us got to know part of your story in the recent film, Taken. As a colonel in the Army, Bill, were you prepared for what was to impact your family around the corner?
No, not at all. Let me correct something. The film, Taken, it says a lot about my story, and the reason it did is because I acted as an advisor to the film writer. But the Liam Neeson character, even though the things he did and got involved with were pretty similar to what I did, I don't want to say that the story was based on me. It's just that I gave the film writer, the screenwriter, the accurate information.
Oh,
but
okay.
I should tell you that everything about that film, Taken, in terms of human trafficking and the vileness and the danger, is real worldwide and in this country. Taking the law into your own hands is Hollywood, and that was the only thing that was flawed about the movie, but it was a movie.
Your personal story, however, it didn't actually end on a happy note, did it?
No, it didn't. I'll tell you, in 1988, I had a daughter that was on a train with a couple of other friends between Bangkok and Singapore, and the train was stopped, and she was abducted along with a couple of other people. And I found out about it about a week after it had happened, and I took a leave of absence. It took me 6 months to find out what really happened to her. And I went to 11 different countries, spent a lot of time in bordellos and bars and opium dens and a lot of traveling, and found out that she had been kidnapped into trafficking by an organized gang, and taken to the island of Borneo, kept in a warehouse, and tried to escape once, and did not succeed. She actually went to a police officer that she saw about a quarter of a mile away from where she was, and the police officer was on the payroll of the traffickers, and he took her back. And to show the other girls that were there that they shouldn't do it, they gang raped and gang sodomized her and eventually dismembered her. And I didn't know this the entire 5.5 months I was looking for her, but when we finally found out and went to the area that she was held, one of the girls that was kidnapped with her relayed that information.
Go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask, you said an organized gang. How often is it, whether it's foreign or domestic, do we actually see that this is organized crime and, in your words, a perfect crime? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. A lot of I ran into 7 different organized gangs that are worldwide. The Yakuza, which is in Japan, and 3 different Chinese triads that are based in Taiwan. Another gang that was based in Burma at the time, now Myanmar. The Russian mafia, by the way, that's a misnomer. There are probably 800 different Russian mafias. And a couple of other gangs that are highly organized that are involved with human trafficking, weapons trafficking, and drug trafficking. In this country, the majority of people that get kidnapped into human trafficking, many of them are parts of gangs, but many of them are also small individual renegades from our country and from others who just don't have any regard for human dignity or life. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
The perfect crime. Trafficking is called a perfect crime for a couple of reasons. One is it is so new to be recognized by countries that there are not laws in existence that give it teeth or credibility. And also it's a perfect crime because when you take a human, that human is reusable. I mean, if you buy drugs, you buy it once. If you buy weapons, you buy it once. Yeah, you can resell them. But women particularly are sold over and over and over and over again. And if I spent $10,000 to buy a woman to have her trafficked out of my car or out of my house or with other group, I can get a return on that investment in a week because, as it happens, most women who are trafficked into the sex trade are forced to have unprotected, violent sex 10 to 20 times a day, 24/7. And so within a week, I can probably get back my $10,000. And the other reason it's a perfect crime is that the punishment and the laws for it are just now making a lot of sense and being enforced. And there used to be a difference between human smuggling and human trafficking. Trafficking is taking a person by fraud, coercion, or force against their will to be involved with a sex trade or forced labor or whatever. Smuggling is when somebody pays you to take somebody across a border, and there's a big difference. And it's only recently that in our country laws have been passed that differentiate the difference.
Do you think many of those that are paid to smuggle, girls and women or kids for that matter across our borders, no matter which part of the United States we're speaking of, do you believe that many of those are young men like we saw in the movie Taken?
Yes, I do.
I spoke with a gentleman yesterday in law enforcement, and we were speaking about that movie, which I viewed this past week. And, you know, I saw myself when I was a teenager, you know, when you get approached by somebody or it's spring break and you're having a good time and this young guy comes up, you know, and you get chatting and you all go off to a party and you don't know who you're going off with. It totally hit home. And I can't for the life of me, we'll hear from Susanna in a few minutes, but with the internet now, which wasn't as big when I was a teenager, that people put their guard down, and they still do that even though there's bad things happening out there.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the internet, I should tell you that it's not uncommon when a young girl is – by the way, the average age of a trafficked female is 16.7, and there are 26 million of them worldwide who are hostage, and there are 50 million in addition to that who need help and only room for 100,000 to give them care and treatment, which is why it's important that Seth, one of our other speakers, is on. Trafficking is a $44 billion a year industry. It 2 years ago overtook weapons as the number two. Drugs is the number one moneymaker. $44 billion. You know, when you stop and think about it, there's 60 seconds in a minute. If you have a million seconds, it's 12 days. If you have a billion seconds, it's 32 years. So we're talking a lot of money, a lot of money. The United States is probably the largest country of receipt, you know, a destination, and generally countries where there's cultural or religious gender inequality, or newly formed states, or countries where the government or the law enforcement is poor or poorly organized or corrupt. That's where most of this happens. It's a significant problem, and we wouldn't have the problem in this country if we pulled our heads out of the sand. It's simply, and I hate saying it because it's supply and demand. If there was not a demand in this country for illicit trade in humans, it wouldn't be happening. But there is, and it's something that nobody wants to. Nobody wants to say the United States anymore has gender inequality, but we do here.
You know, I've read a lot of reports because we've been working with human trafficking as an initiative through Seroptimus of the Americas and Seroptimus International. And a lot of the reports domestically speaking, seem to be reports of how many people have been captured, how many people have been arrested. They don't really state how many of them are actually the victims themselves, which I've learned a lot through Transitions Global recently. And it's appalling that a lot of these girls and young women that are trafficked here on our own soil, one would think, okay, they've been arrested, that's all well and good, they're going to be safe now, but they go right back to their pimps, and their pimps bail them out. So for this purpose, with statistical data that I've been reading, how many of, and maybe Seth can answer this a little bit better, but how many of the people statistically has the government, what are they doing about this serious problem for the victims? For the victims, not how many people they can arrest.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not the person to answer that. I know Seth can probably with more veracity than I can, but I know this. In the United States, there are only 4 houses or treatment areas where a sexually abused, a woman trafficked for sexual reasons can find shelter. Only 4. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and I'm sure Seth can talk to it.
So 4 houses, what, an average of maybe, Seth, maybe 30, no more than 40 beds in each of those homes. So we're looking at less than 200 places for somebody to come for shelter out of over 100,000, according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Am I correct?
Well, the last update that I got was that there's 62 beds in the U.S. that are available for holistic care for these girls. And then the last update that I read from the FBI was that they were estimating that there's 300,000 domestic girls that are trafficked each year.
What exactly is our country doing about the human trafficking issue, Seth or Bill?
Well, you know, I've talked quite a bit, so I probably don't need to anymore, but our country, because of the way it's organized, you know, the states make their own laws. We have direction from our federal government, and we do have the Trafficking in Persons Protection Act that was instituted in October of 2002. But generally, it's up to law enforcement people and state legislatures to, you know, to make the law and for it to be enforced. The thing is, and I'll just say this and I'll be quiet. In this country, if a male practices infidelity or cheats on so-and-so or, you know, has sex out of marriage or whatever, people say, hey, yeah, all right. But, you know, but if a woman does it, she's automatically labeled a slut and a whore. And, you know, we have to change our attitude about humanness and dignity. And until we do that, there are going to be people on every street corner of every major city in this country who are going to be abused and used. And one of the reasons that I think that we're so slow to react to it is that it's been one of those hidden, like you say, epidemics for so long, because it's the good old boys, and it's a good old boy network, and, you know, boys will be boys, and they're just whores, and what's the big deal? And, you know, those things, movies make, you know, perpetuate that crap. And we need to realize that it's causing a problem.
Well, you know, Seth, I'll be right back with you. We have a couple callers calling in. Just a reminder, folks, you can dial 347-838-8622 to ask Suzanne, Seth, or Bill any questions. We're going to go to a caller right now. Caller, you're on the air. Hello? Hello? Area code 541. Okay. We have a caller from Washington.
He's totally lost it.
Hello?
Oh, no. Right.
Okay, I'm going to mute the callers. We have two callers on the line. Just a reminder, folks, this is a live streaming show, so please, when you hear a caller, you're on the air, please ask your question. We're going to go back to caller on area code 541. Caller, you're on the air. Okay. I apologize to our guests and our listeners.
And done dishes.
Okay, caller, you're on the air from Washington State. Is there a caller there?
Thank you.
Okay. I apologize that to the guests. Seth, let me ask you, I know what you do worldwide with Transitions Global. What is Transitions Global doing domestically, if not in Portland, in the United States of America?
Domestically, our focus is in Portland at the moment, because that's where we're based, as our home office. But we've talked to multiple other cities throughout the U.S. that are also interested in getting behind us and setting up safe homes throughout the U.S. If I may, go back to your question about what is government doing about this issue. I was in a meeting a couple of nights ago with Alex Johnson. He's a policy advisor for the Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe, otherwise known as the Helsinki Commission. And he stated that the Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking of Persons had poured in $100 million into trafficking last year. And he said that $23 million of that was poured into the U.S. And so I started doing the numbers. I love Bill's equation with the 1 billion seconds is 32 years. So I started doing my own math. And if you take that $23 million, first of all, that's only 23% of what's spent on the globe. It's only spent here in the U.S. Secondly, if you divide that by the 300,000 girls that the FBI estimates are trafficked, that's only $76.66 per girl per year. And we're talking about needing a program that can spend about $70,000 a year on a girl. So right now we're drastically behind the curve. So that's where organizations like Transition steps in and reaches out to the public. I don't know that we can count on government to take care of this issue immediately. I know that, you know, as the people, we need to speak up and ask them to. But in the meantime, we need to move on our own behalf to do something about it.
And how does somebody listening today, or somebody publicly, you know, you see something like those wonderful police officers at Berkeley did in regards to JC, which has been obviously on the news and a heartwarming story, even though it has a very bad message to it. But how does one make it their business when you're dealing with organized crime, the perfect crime, and yet somebody may be scared to say, hey, it's not in my backyard, it's none of my business. You know, how does one make it their business?
As the average American, that's the million-dollar question. How do we get people involved in an issue that is so quiet, so behind the scenes, and it's very intangible? I liken it a lot to cancer research or AIDS research, because there's not a lot as an individual that I can do to go into a lab and create some sort of, you know, cure for these diseases. And in the same way, there's not a lot that I can do to find these girls, round them up, sit down with them, and give them counseling for 2 years. I think the answer lies in finding a good organization that is already doing this work and get behind them in whatever way you can. There was a man, William Lloyd Garrison, said, and I'm not quoting this correctly, but he basically said, if the greatest downfall of man has been to not do anything because he only thought he could do a little bit. And so that's what I think we as a culture need to realize, is that we just have to do something about it. Find a place to plug in and do a little bit, even if it's volunteering for an hour a week or donating $10 a month or whatever the case may be. Every little bit adds up.
Suzanne, are you with us?
I sure am.
Oh, you know, in Orange County, my first experience with the Orange County Human Trafficking Task Force was with, a couple years ago, Seroptimus of Desert Coast Region. We worked with Orange County Task Force as well as the Orange County Transit on our initiative of human trafficking to mark January 11th, which is Human Trafficking National Awareness Day. What are you all doing in the Orange County area that not only may benefit Orange County as far as education, but can benefit others across the country to take stock in what you're doing that's been successful? And then what are the signs to look for?
Well, I'll tell you, the issue of trafficking, as has been revealed by Bill and our other guest, is that it's global. This is a global crisis. This isn't just an issue of, here we have this one crime. This is a crime that is so pervasive and so explosive, and I'm not, you know, using fear tactics. This happens to be the truth, and I think my colleagues can back me up on this, that it has gotten so out of hand that law enforcement literally has reached a point where they cannot arrest their way out of it. And so the key thing to do, A, and I'd like all of our callers to take down this phone number to the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, and it's anonymous. So if someone suspects that someone may be trafficked, you know, during their usual daily activities, they should call 1-888-3737-888. Again, that's 1-888-3737-888. And there are definite signs to look for. I mean, a lot of women go to nail salons, for example. There are a number of businesses that seem to be legitimate businesses, but in fact, they could have trafficked people working there. And some of the businesses would include nail salons, of course, massage parlors, those sorts of things. And any kind of business where you're engaging with someone and you see someone in the background that doesn't seem to have any authority or control of their own freedom. For example, are they being accompanied by someone who seems to be controlling? Maybe it's a boss. Maybe they're not speaking on their own behalf. Maybe you ask them a question, but somebody else answers. That's the key. There are people who don't have any control over their personal schedule, their money, their identification, their travel documents. You wouldn't know that, but law enforcement certainly would know when they talk to these individuals. They are transported to and from work. They're totally enslaved. I mean, it may not appear that anything is out of the ordinary unless you know these signs to look for. And then, unfortunately, many trafficked individuals are enslaved by debt bondage. Here's something that anyone can look for is if you're doing business with someone and they seem particularly shy. They may not be shy at all, but they appear shy. You notice bruises on their body. They appear to be fearful or depressed. Anytime you see someone that seems to be overly submissive, for example, but you can ask them questions. You can ask them things like, well, what kind of work do you do? You know, ask them if they're being paid, if you can, and see if you can get them alone to answer these questions. A key question to ask is, are you allowed to come and go as you want to? And you can also ask them if they or their family have been threatened. And then a big question is, gee, you know, where do you sleep and eat? And if you see there's hesitation in them answering these questions, these are all just basic things that an individual like us can ask that would key us into, are these people that we're talking to trafficked, in fact? And you know what? Because that number that I gave you allows you to be anonymous, you don't have to worry about making a call like somebody's going to knock on your door. Let law enforcement do their job. And the Orange County Human Trafficking Task Force meets on the last Wednesday of the month, and I'm happy to give our listeners that address. It's 1821 East Dyer Road, Suite 200 in Santa Ana. And the telephone number is 949-975-0244. And, of course, they can go on the website, which is ochumantrafficking.org. But there are simple things that people can do to be proactive. One of the things that we see all the time is we see advertisements for trafficked people in the backs of independently published newspapers. Craigslist is a location where you might see trafficked victims. They speak in code, for example. You might see someone that says, I love flowers, and I would love to receive 100 flowers. Well, 100 flowers means $100, or 100 roses means $100. So that's one discreet way of them getting out what their price is. But Bill is absolutely right on the money when he says that human beings are a commodity that are a product. They use them as a product that they can just reuse and reuse and reuse. And a lot of people are confused, and they can't understand why these trafficked victims don't escape. Well, A, they're being brainwashed. And as Bill mentions, his daughter was a product of that as well. So these are this is a long-winded answer to your somewhat short question. But I, you know, once I start talking, I just am filled with all this information I want to tell our audience.
Well, you're definitely passionate, as well as Seth and Bill. One other thing to notice that I have in everything that you've all shared with me off of the air has been a lot of these girls, especially in escort services in Vegas, Texas, Chicago, New York, Miami, they're actually very drugged out. Is that
right? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Here's what happens. Here's a typical scenario. And by the way, in terms of missing persons, there's approximately 1.3 million people reported missing, or children reported missing annually, and of that, approximately 797,000 are reported to law enforcement. Now, take this. You've got a kid walking alone. And by the way, teenagers think that they're invincible because they think, oh, I've taken some karate, I can defend myself. Well, they can't.
I know not to talk to strangers.
Yeah, well, good luck. The best idea yet is the buddy system. We need to re-implement that and teach our kids, don't go places alone, don't take shortcuts, have your friend walk with you, and don't be afraid to call mom and dad or a trusted adult to come pick you up, especially if you're fearful. And if you find that somebody's following you in a car, don't run forward. Don't run forward, run backwards, because it's more difficult for a car to chase you in reverse, and then seek help that way. But
Bill,
the thing is that you have a child who's walking, whether it be a teenager or a younger child, and then they're abducted. Well, the first thing that they're going to be, that often is going to happen if they're a traffic victim, is they're going to be shot up with some kind of cocktail of drugs, so they're out of it. Within an hour, they can already be a product earning money for their captor. Now, the next thing that happens, if it's a situation where they were lured and seduced through conversation, the initial psychological feeling that the victim has is that they caused it themselves, because if they hadn't talked to that individual, or if they hadn't met their chat room friend or their online friend, then they wouldn't be in this situation. And now, once they've been sexually assaulted, now comes the brainwashing. And the brainwashing is, you're worthless. It's better that your parents not see how you've become or what's happened to you. Let them remember you, how you were. So the victim often believes that it's their fault that they ended up in that situation, when indeed it is not their fault, and they need to understand that no matter who they talk to, no matter how they got themselves in that situation, if in fact they feel that they are responsible for it, they're still the victim.
Suzanne, let me go to a caller. I believe we have a caller on the line. Caller, you're on there.
Hi, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Hi, this is Wynn Wakala. Thank you so much for doing this. And I wanted to say I'm really pleased to find that there are men who are real men who don't have to show their power by making women beneath them. And as Bill said, I feel like it is, the problem is the supply or the demand side. And how do we make men more so that they're not so insecure that they have to try to, you know, make women, you know, do these things that where the supply comes in?
Seth, would you like to take that one, or Bill?
Well, all I'll say, this is Bill.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we socialize ourselves that way in this country. We have for years, and it's getting worse. And we just need to find out what our value system is, and if we need to make some changes, we got to do it. But we socialize males differently than we socialize females, and one of the end results is what we're talking about here tonight.
Suzanne made brought up a question regarding the buddy system, which I think is fabulous. Bill, did you say your daughter was over there on a train with a friend?
With two other friends, yes.
And were they safe or?
No, they were not. In that part of the country in that time of year, 1988, it was pretty common for bandits and outlaws to stop the train and take money, jewelry, people at their will off of it. It's a little different now, but that's the way it was back then. I agree with Suzanne, though. The buddy system is great. I can't remember the young woman's name in Aruba who's been missing now for 2 or 3 years, but
Natalie Holloway.
Yeah, Natalie. And you know, when I first saw that, I thought somebody put either roofies or some other date rape drug, you know, and she's gone now, making a lot of money for somebody. I hate saying that, but it makes a lot of sense.
Hey, Bill, I feel the same way.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
Wynn, do you have any other questions?
I guess what do you think about the John schools and doing more enforcement once they, you know, to pick up the Johns and to do something about them?
Anybody want to take that?
Well, I'm only familiar with the one in San Francisco. But San Francisco has instituted a policy where the Johns, these are the people that utilize prostitutes, are arrested and charged just as the prostitute is, and they are their names are and pictures are printed in the paper, and they're required to go to a John school, which lasts, I think there's 12 sessions, one a week, and they're educated on what, you know, what they did, why they did what they did was wrong, quite a bit about trafficking and that kind of stuff. And I think the end result is they get a reduction in a fine. I think the jury is out whether or not it's going to make a difference or not. I know those things have been tried for the past 60 years in this country, and they never seem to last.
But although that said, I do have to level the playing field, and there have been a number of cases where, and again, when Seth and Bill talk about the socialization of men versus women and how boys are brought up versus how girls are brought up in terms of what's accepted sexually, et cetera, and not, some of these Johns have in fact been responsible for rescuing some of our trafficked victims because they weren't aware. They weren't aware of how serious that this is a crime. They weren't aware that these girls aren't turning tricks because they want to, because they didn't understand trafficking. There seems to be a false impression in America that girls become prostitutes for the money or because they're low life. And that's how they end up there. Nothing could be further.
Go ahead, Suzanne. I'm sorry.
Yeah, nothing could be further from the truth. And so there needs to be education and outreach from the youngest ages. We need to go into the high schools. We need to talk about trafficking. We need to talk about sexual exploitation. We need to put it on the table. I speak around the country on internet safety and child safety and all different sorts of things, trafficking, et cetera. And I can't tell you the number of times I've been told that I can't use the word sex because I'm talking at a religious school. You know, this has to stop, because if an 8-year-old can tell you or identify a transsexual, then those parents are living with their heads in the sand. And the only way that we're going to stop this epidemic, and I use the word epidemic for the full meaning or definition of that word, is through education and outreach. And it's through education and outreach, I believe, that the supply and the demand will lessen.
Good point. We're going to go to another caller in the Oregon area. Let's see. Caller, you're on the air. Hello? Okay. Well, Seth, tell us, what is the biggest need in Portland right now that transitions global and this epidemic is in need of here?
The biggest need by far is a safe home, a home for these girls that we can give them holistic trauma therapy, help rebuild their cognitive skills, help rebuild their social skills, and help them find out what they want to do in life, teach them how to dream again, give them a voice in the world, and then move them back into society. That is by far the greatest need. If you talk to FBI, Multnomah County has a human trafficking task force, the Department of Human Services, the judges, commissioners, everybody up here says this by far is the greatest need. Because once we have these girls, and there's plenty of girls, we have nowhere to put them holistically, where they can get the help that they need.
Yeah, right now they're being put into probation holding areas, you know?
Yeah, they're going to the juvenile halls. They're going back to their foster parents. They're being released on their own recognizance. When the FBI did their Operation Cross Country in February, we had 7 girls that were rescued, and 4 of them were gone within 48 hours.
Well, they're also not given any money. They're given very little money, and they're also, because they were brainwashed, and often their families are threatened.
Sure, there's a lot of different stimulus that's on the girls as far as whether they're addicted to a drug. They have, like you said, no pocket money. They have one person that they trust. That one person might know where their family's at and have told this girl, look, if you talk to anybody, I'll make sure your family is killed. So there's a lot of different pressures on these little girls when they're going through this whole.
So,
and they need a place to go where they can be safe.
So with that, I know that Transitions Global, and I'm a huge advocate for it, so anybody listening, the reason it's being brought up is because I do believe, as the co-chair of the Human Trafficking Conference coming up in January, that the Northwest region needs this shelter. A shelter. America needs this shelter.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about what we can do to help Transitions Global, Seth.
Well, this month we have a huge opportunity to help Transitions get this safe home up and running, and that's Bike for Shelter. And you can find that at www.bikeforshelter.org, and you just spell it all out as one word. This is a group of students that have come to us from the local colleges here in Portland, and have said, this is unacceptable that we do not have a home yet. And so we as students, we want to step up and do something about this. And so they have organized a 27-mile ride around this beautiful city. And then it's also going through some of the sketchier parts of town. The registration is $27. It's on September 27th. If you're noticing a theme here, it's because many people quote that there's 27 million people in slavery. And so we're trying to do as much as we can to honor them for that. There's also a way that if you want to register but you want to do more than that, you can set up your own fundraising page for the bike ride. The bike ride in and of itself is going to be a blast. We're going to have music and dancers. We work in Cambodia and India and here in America, and so we're working on having dancers represent each part of those different countries. We'll have stuff for the families to come out and just have a great time doing something good about this issue. If you can't make it, you can't participate for whatever reason, but you still want to donate, you can go to the website and click on Sponsor a Rider and make a general donation, or find a writer in particular that you want to sponsor. So this is an amazing way to get behind it. If we get the community behind us, we can make this happen. And this race, if we max out with what the race has potential to do, we could open a safe home in the next several months.
Oh, that is great news. And
fantastic.
Oregon, if you're listening, buck up, Oregon. Oregon is the top 2 or the top 1 state for environmental when it comes to bike riding, something like that. You ride a bike, participate in that. That is how you can make a difference. Bikeforshelter.org. You can also go to transitionsglobal.org. Bike for Shelter is on September 27th, and everyone wants to know how they can make a difference, what they can do. This is a prime example of one way you can make a difference, and it doesn't have to set you back thousands of dollars. And it's a great opportunity to bring your family out and educate the kids today. NationalVigilForHope.org. We do a lot with missing and abducted children and adults. And we also go out and educate and fingerprint. It may not be your typical traditional day out with the family, but in the end, you're keeping them safe.
Yeah, I'd also like to jump in there, too, with regards to Amber Ready. Amber Ready launched this past April, and it's an amazing service. And
it is.
And for $50 for 2 years, by the way,
right.
You can sign on to their service. You can get that $50 back if you renew with your existing cell phone provider from a rebate form. Or, in fact, you can even, if you want to sign up with a new cellular provider, you can wait until you sign up with them. And what it does is it allows you to input all of your children's, as many kids as you have, including yourself, personal identifying information directly into the cell phone. Amber Ready does not keep it at all. And then in the event that you have to call law enforcement, there is on average about a two-hour turnaround time for law enforcement to get the information out to their colleagues and other police cars, et cetera. And by putting all this information in your cell phone, and then when the officer arrives at the home, you say, you're Amber Ready, you give them your cell phone, the information was locked in that cell phone, they unlock it, they upload it directly to their law enforcement database, and in less than 15 minutes, you have all of that missing person information, including photographs that you've put on your cell phone for each child, and now that can be disseminated.
And
that, I believe, is going to revolutionize child safety. But
I
the key
agree.
Thing,
that
too,
is sorry to interrupt, Suzanne.
It's amberready.com.
Amberready.com. We have 8 minutes left of the show. If we run over, folks, the live streaming portion of this show will end at 4 o'clock Pacific time. However, if we go over, I know that the guests will continue to answer your questions for a few minutes afterwards. So, but yes, Amber Ready is a wonderful company that can keep your children safe. TransitionsGlobal.org. Bill goes around speaking. All of those websites can be found on
myinternet.com.
You're on there also, Suzanne, blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. The links are on the site, folks. Again, if you want to call, last questions for the panel, 347-838-8622. I want to thank our guests before we end, so publicly the listeners and the callers today and our guests know how appreciative many folks are that there are people out there having a voice for justice, having a voice for change, as the new administration's campaign was. And folks, I can't encourage you enough to get involved with these organizations to have that voice. Our next show will be next Wednesday. The time will be changing, but keep looking at the website. The topic is rants and raves. And, boy, do I have a lot of rants and raves for next week. We want you to continue logging on. We will be moving October to blogtalkradio.com/voicesforjustice, where these kind of topics will continue to get across to our listeners. I'm not here to be Nancy Grace or Jane Velez. I love both of those ladies. They do justice. They have a voice for justice for every cause that we're pushing on this show. But I'm as irate as the rest of the folks on this show today in regards to human trafficking. It is the secret, the dark secret of America. It really truly is, because we don't want it in our backyard. Coalition for the Homeless in San Gabriel Valley was my client in Los Angeles, and they too needed a shelter to get all the people that can no longer afford a house over their head. They needed a shelter. Not in my backyard. Well, folks, it's everybody's business. These epidemics didn't start overnight. These epidemics have been building for centuries, for decades, and here we are. We can continue to let it beat us, or we can continue to fight for it and bring justice to it. So I thank our panel. We'll take a few more calls, so call in. But I want to ask each of the speakers today, each of the guests, the experience here in the U.S., what is the biggest impact on you personally in regards to the trafficking issue? Colonel, we'll start with you. Bill?
I don't understand your question.
What is the biggest impact that's going on here in the United States, especially from somebody that has fought for this country for years? You're retired from the armed services. What would you like to see happen? And despite the fact that this impacted you personally, would this have become something passionate of yours if it hadn't hit you close to home?
I see what you're saying. Well, I have a couple of thoughts. One is is to think globally but act locally. And no snowflake in a snowstorm ever thought he was responsible for the avalanche. One person can make a difference. Rosa Parks was one person who said, "I'm not moving to the back of the bus," and she made a huge difference in the world. And and I think there's a lot of stories like that with people who don't get any recognition. But you know, faith-based organizations, get hooked up with one. The Doritos company is finally publishing things about trafficking on the backs of their Doritos containers. The city of Seattle has stuff about trafficking on their buses. As this stuff balloons, we're seeing in this country a lot of people taking a stand. I teach at the University of Oregon and the Monterey Institute of International Studies classes on trafficking, and without fail, every year for the past 6 years at each of those places, I have always had women who came up during a break and said, "Thank you. I want to tell you I was trafficked. I was kept a prisoner. I was this. My stepdad prostituted me in the back of our van." And so I think there's hope. But you have to want to do something. You know, generally people don't get affected unless they're directly, don't make a move unless they're directly affected. But you don't want to be directly affected by trafficking. Don't wait for that to happen. Anyway, Seth, thank you for your presentation. Nice to talk to you again. And Suzanne, offline, I'd like to find a way to get a hold of you.
Okay.
we'll connect all of you. Seth, what about you? Any last thoughts?
Yeah, I think for me, I have three little daughters. And, after the last one was born, I became a feminist all the way, you know.
We're glad to have you in our community.
I think the hardest thing for me was when the FBI raids were done in February, there was a court-appointed advocate that called me directly and asked me if they could put one of these little girls into our shelter. And I had to tell her no. We don't have a shelter to put her into. And for me as a father, knowing that I was telling some other father's little girl, no, I can't help you. Through all the fundraising and awareness and everything else that I do, it was as if I was punched in the gut, because it all boiled down to, when am I going to be able to say yes? You know, you referenced the current administration. Yes, we can. Yes, we can take these girls in. Yes, we can make a difference and change their lives. When are we going to be at that point when we can actually do that? And so that's what keeps me going every day.
Suzanne?
Well, I think the thing that keeps me going is I'm a single mom, and I have a 19-year-old daughter. And my daughter tells me that, you know, she hates coming into my office because she always sees pictures of missing or murdered children on my computer. And she asked me recently, she says, "What drives you? Why are you doing this?" And I said, "Because if that were you, I would want to know that somebody was doing what they could to help me find you." And also, I think when I was in college, I was brutally raped. And I kept it from my parents for years. And I'm lucky to be alive, in fact. And it was some guy that was a predator, and he had a puppy, and I was dropping packages because I bought a bunch of Christmas packages, and it was the day that all the kids went home, most of the kids went home for Christmas vacation. But because my grandfather died, I had to stay at school another night. And so I thought, great, I'll finish these Christmas gifts. And so I kept dropping these packages. This guy befriends me. I allow him to get past security by carrying these packages. I didn't think there was anything wrong. You know, he asked for a glass of water. I didn't let him in. The next thing I knew, he was in my dorm room with the door shut. And I was held hostage, and all sorts of horrible things happened to me during the course of about 18 hours. And that happened a number of years ago, and so the police, you know, didn't do a thing. And he obviously wasn't brought to justice. But it wasn't until I got involved in an outreach effort when there was ethnic cleansing out of the former Yugoslavia, when I brought some women to this country to speak on what they had seen to prove that there was ethnic cleansing. And so the person that was coordinating this said, well, what do you get out of this? Why do you care? You're an American, you know. And for the first time in my life, I said, because I was raped. And all those years, for over 20 years at that point, or 15 years, I had buried that. And why? Because I thought it was my fault. I thought I was the fault that happened to me. I was the reason that happened to me because I allowed myself to be duped by this guy. I never thought of myself as a victim. So I know from firsthand experience what it's like, and I came out okay. And I got that guy to leave. I mean, it was a miracle that I'm even talking today. But nonetheless, that's what drives me too. And if that could happen to me over an 18-hour period, imagine what happens to these girls who are there longer than 18 hours, or even if they're there for a few hours. And the key thing is that parents, and who's ever listening, if your child is gone and they're expected to be home, A, there is no 24-hour waiting period. I hear that from a lot of parents that they think that there is. There isn't. You call law enforcement. You report them missing because time is not your friend. Seconds count. In 1 minute, that predator can have your child, you know, a mile away. And a child goes missing every 40 seconds. So that's what drives me.
Thank you, Suzanne. To close, what drives me? Brianna and Isabella, a 2.5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old niece of mine that look at me every day and say, hold my hand. They're not too young. They're not too young. They're never too young to educate them on being safe. My mission, if you can educate, if you can entertain a child 24/7 on the cable networks with cartoons and everything, we can keep our kids and our family safe 24/7. So whether it's Voices for Justice or, you know, being the biggest Nancy fan on CNN or whatever the case may be, staying in tune and making a difference and having a voice for justice no matter what you're advocating for, because it is so important. There's more people in the world than there are criminals. And if we all band together and form one global neighborhood watch, people will stop doing, hopefully, the things that drive them to do these awful things. To close, again, I thank our speakers today. And, again, we are pushing. We've put calls in to some upcoming speakers for a push for Sarah Cruzan. You can Google her, Sarah, S-A-R-A, Cruzan, K-R-U-Z-A-N. Broke my heart to read about this young girl. Again, to reiterate, 11 years old, she's kidnapped and abducted, raped over and over again, sold into trafficking, and then after a few years and nobody listening to her cries for help, she took the law into her own hands and killed the criminal. And yet, she is the one serving the rest of her life in prison.
And yeah, with no possibility of parole, I might add.
With no possibility of parole. But you know what, folks, if you're listening to this show, Voices for Justice, if we have enough voices and we get folks like Arnold Schwarzenegger and the governor and the Senator Yee and everybody else working for her, she will be the first of many that are taking cell space that people like the gentleman that should be serving a life sentence that kept JC for 18 years. So I'm going to close with that thought, but please continue going to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. The topic next week, rants and raves. Join us as we explore some of the mind-boggling news making the headlines recently, and I encourage all of our listeners, continue listening to this show and all of the mainstream of Nancy Grace and Jane Velez and Chris Hansen. Can't say enough for NBC and Dateline. There are people out there having a voice for justice, and you keep reading, you keep writing, you keep listening, and you keep reviewing everything that they're putting out there because there's a reason for it. Thank you again to all of our guests, and thank you to you for listening, and thank you for being a hero among us. Good night, everyone.